Welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for July 29th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and sitting right in front of me, smack dab in the middle of Nerima Ward in Tokyo, is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Well, I'm here enjoying the hospitality of Casa de Gibson.
The Purple Palace.
The Purple Palace, indeed. And I need my purple shades to sort of make it even out and look normal around here.
The walls are not purple. What are you talking about? You're exaggerating. You're scaring the children. Which you've been known to do at times.
The Joker's hat.
It's not as purple as my last place. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, yeah. John is taking a step back on the purple continuum, but he's still pretty far ahead of the curve.
All right. Well, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Jose Fernandez, the newest member of the Oryx Buffaloes. We're going to discuss Tadahito Iguchi's reaching 2,000 combined hits in the MLB and MPB. And then we're going to talk about the All-Star Series finale and a little bit more. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, the second half is underway, and you can catch all the Giants' home games as they make their stretch drive for the Central League pennant. If you live in the United States, go to oneworldsports.com and find out how to watch Giants games live. All right, so yesterday I got a chance to, via Skype, have a quick chat with Jose Fernandez, who just recently joined the Oryx Buffaloes but does not yet have his visa. So he's sitting around waiting for paperwork to get done. But in the meantime, this is a guy, 38 years old, and as I brought up in the interview, he has played for four teams in Japan. But this is the third time that he's going back to a team that he's previously played for. I mean, it's wacky.
It is pretty weird, but, there's, I don't know what to say about Jose, except he seems like we just can't, we like him so much that he's just coming back for encore after encore. I mean, this is encore number four or five.
Yeah, it looks like he's gone, and, it looks like, and he's a real powerful guy, really good solid swing. He came to, he joined the Lotte Marines in 2003, and as far as numbers go, he had 100 RBIs, and that was the only time in his career he reached 100 RBIs in Japan.
Right.
And that year he hit 32 home runs. I think he had more. He had one season where he hit more. But from there, he went to Cebu for 2 years. He went to Rakuten for 3 years. He spent a year with Oryx, then went back to Cebu for 2 years, then back to Rakuten for more. Anybody lost yet?
Yeah, you need a roadmap to keep up with Mayo, yeah?
Well, you don't need a roadmap. You need to know how to go around in circles because he comes back where he started at every place except for Lotte. And he's now back with Oryx for what figures to be a half season. And
right.
I mean, you'll hear in the chat, he's healthy, he's feeling good. And he's also now a 10-year player in Japan, which means he doesn't count against the import limit of four. So the other foreign players on the team don't have to worry about having to go down to the farm if he's activated. So it's a good situation for him. Maybe he can instill some of that knowledge that he has about the pitchers. He still knows about pitchers in the Pacific League in particular, I think. So once he straightens out his visa issues, maybe he'll be straightening out a few curveballs here. Let's listen to see exactly what he had to say. Okay, our guest this week is Jose Fernandez, who hasn't played a game yet, but he's been really gracious, and he's taking some time out to chat with us. Thank you very much, Jose.
Thank you, and just an opportunity to say hello to all the fans, and thank you for having me on the show.
All right. Now, how did you end up returning to Japan in the middle of the season like this?
Well, we weren't sure if we were going to play another season or not, and I'm feeling great, being healthy, and talking with the family, I decided to continue working hard and working out, and I was feeling great. I went to Mexico and hit 400 over there for about a month and a half, and I said, there's still some game left, so I said, well, let me just give it a shot. So I just been working pretty hard, also promoting me to the MPB, and Oryx needed some help, I guess.
Yeah, they're not consistently scoring, so that was going to be one of my questions. Do you think you're going to come in and try to be a slugger, or do you think it's just important for you to try to get on base each time when you bat?
Well, you know, it helped the team no matter, you know, in which way I can. You know, I got to try to do the best I can to, you know, whether it's with my, you know, experience with MPB, with the other player, whether it's, you know, slugging balls out, whether it's driving runs in. I think that's what, you know, my experience in Japan for so long has been, is that I've been able to produce in the clutch. I've been able to, you know, hit some home runs. So I think that's just, you know, everybody knows what Jose Fernandez has been in Japan, and you know, there's still some game left, and I think it can contribute, help those teams to, you know, win some games. That's what it's all about.
Yep. Now, you're one of the few foreign players who's played with four teams, and this is the third time you're coming back for a second stint with one team. How do you do this?
Well, I guess the only way to say this is I've been, you know, first of all, I've been blessed. You know, the Lord has blessed me with a great career and healthy, and he blessed me all along to be able to play this long. But you know how Japan is. I guess it's all I can say is, you know, some people in the office still like me. I guess I've been able to have a good relation with people, and you know, both sides, you know, I've been able to perform with them, and I also been able to have, I guess, discipline, and you know, I guess, you know, you could, some people will say personality, some people will say, you know, attitude. I don't know. You know, I think that's what it's all about. It's about being a good teammate and help the other, you know, players around you get better. And, you know, I've been able to be fortunate to do that for quite a while.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, when I looked up your numbers, you had a really good season with Lotte when you played for them in your first year, and they pretty much gave up on you, and you've never been back there.
Yeah, that's the only team I haven't repeated with. But, you know, Lotte in that time, they went in a different direction. And, you know, it was a front office decision at that time. But that was when Bobby Valentine came up, and, you know, they were, you know, making certain changes on it. So, and after that, you know, I've been able to, you know, play with all the teams that at that time they had the knee. Lotte didn't have the knee because they had the player, I guess. So.
All right. Okay. Now, of course, each team is different and each season is different, but what year would you call your best year in Japan?
Well, I mean, my first year was pretty good. I would say that your first year is always the one that you most remember because it's your first year. But, you know, I've been blessed, like I mentioned before, that have been able to have a long career in Japan and play good seasons with different teams. You know, I had good years with the second year with Sabre. We won a championship in 2004. I was pretty excited, and, you know, it was a great experience. I had a good season personally. And I have a great season as a team. I think that's always the one that you remember because that's when you wear a ring for it and you win the championship with a teammate. You know, and I think those two are the most years that the year that I most remember based upon, you know, my first experience in Japanese baseball and also, you know, my first championship. That's always the one you know, remember. That's still what I want. You know, that's what I want. I want to be able to win more games and go to the playoff, and that's really what you strive for, and being able to play, you know, to play late to the season when everybody's home watching.
Right, yeah. Now, you're coming into this team, and it's obviously kind of struggled scoring runs. Has the team told you what they expect from you?
You know, it's really being in Japan for so long. They know who I am. I already play with them, and I know what the team is. And so we basically know each other well, and they expect me to produce and drive some runs in, basically help the team, the offense, and, you know, bring in the clutch, win some baseball game, maybe, you know. They I can provide a right-handed bat off the bench. I can be at DH. I can play first base. So, you know, and also I'm a Japanese. That's one of, obviously, the most attractive part of it is that, you know, they can have, you know, foreigners. They can have Lee. They can have Valdez. They can have all the foreign players, and they can add me, and I don't necessarily count as a Japanese.
Right. So have they talked to you about that? You're going to play a little bit of first base? You're going to do some DHing and pinch hitting? They talked to you about that as well?
Yeah, that's basically what they have in mind. You know, obviously, it's all going to come down to at that time what they need and what they're needed at that point. But, you know, really is, it's that's how it is. It's going to be, they know I'm going to provide a right-hand bat off the bench if they need to. They know that I'm going to be able to hit on the clutch, drive some runs in, RBIs. That's what really they're looking for. And play some defense in first base if they need to at that time. So, you know, I think it helps the team. It gives them flexibility. Me being Japanese and being play the corner, first baseman, and DH, and also being a veteran player that I can play, help some younger players, and also come out of the bench, you know, as a right-handed hitter and pitch, in a clutch situation.
Okay. Now, how difficult is it to join a team like this? That's, you know, the team is really close to a playoff spot. You're joining midstream, and you want to try to contribute. How difficult is it?
Well, you know, it's really all mental part of the game, and that's another part of the game that you, as a veteran player, as an older player, you kind of, you can only say, you know what, you know how, what you need to do to get ready. You know yourself as a player. You go ahead and basically work the things that you need to work.
All right. And the last question.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. The last question now. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard about Shohei Ohtani, the two-way player for the Fighters. What do you think of that concept? Pitching and playing in the field.
It's interesting. Interesting for it to have a kind of player like that. Obviously, he has a lot of talent, and you hate for a player like that to get hurt. Now, obviously, he has the biggest chances to get hurt. You know, playing two positions. Obviously, he won't be able to get ready in as a hitter the way that he's supposed to, the way everybody else does, because he has to work out his pitching. So you hate for a player like that to get hurt, but it's also very interesting to see if that kind of formula will work. So, you know, it hasn't been done. It hasn't worked in the major league because basically teams are afraid of a player like that get hurt. You know, with so much talent, you really want to focus and give 100% on one of the side of the game. But, you know, you got players like Babe Ruth did it a long time ago. So, you know, maybe it's already, you know, it can be done.
All right. Well, hopefully we don't have to see you pitching for Oryx. We can hopefully you be concentrating on hitting home runs.
That's right.
All right, man. Thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
And good luck with the Buffaloes.
All right, man. I'll see you soon.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, Jose, for making time Friday afternoon to talk to me. It was obviously via Skype. There were some rough areas, and I hope you guys were able to hear everything. I had to splice a couple areas together because we just had connection issues. But overall, what was it? The biggest thing that stood out for you, Jeff?
Well, I think that the main thing with Jose is he doesn't need a map to get back to Japan or to see what the pitchers are throwing. I think he can probably see the pitches coming in his sleep. And, you know, and that's, I'm sure there will be some rude surprises because nothing ever stands still, and he's been facing pitching in the Mexican League. And though he has in his mind's eye, he sees Japanese baseball. He probably sees that everywhere. Still, there'll be some changes, some differences, and, you know, there will be an adjustment. But, he's played for every team in the Pacific League except the Fighters and the Hawks. So he knows most of the pitchers, and he's played with Oryx before. He knows most of the players. So the adjustment time is going to be very small, which is key because, there's less than half a season left.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he's the kind of guy who's going to come in and he'll do anything they ask of him.
Definitely.
So what's your choice? You want to come and do everything we ask you to do, or you want to stay in Mexico? you want to repeat that? Okay.
No, can I get back to you on that?
Yeah. Well, this is a guy who's got he's got one sibling who's a doctor and one sibling who's a lawyer, and he's considered the smart one. So, he knows what's going on, and that's what they want him for, and he's the guy who can do it.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing that stood out for me was that he was thinking about calling it quits. I mean, he's 38, and and he has more than 200 home runs and more than 1,250 hits in Japan. You know, the biggest thing for me is he said he was healthy and feeling good, and that's so important for older players. And you know, he also said he was hitting 400.
Yeah.
In the Mexican League, and that means that he's productive. And if that's the case, and he was hitting well in Mexico, I think he can transfer, or that can translate to some success here in Japan. And like you said, he doesn't have to study a bunch of pitchers. There are a few young pitchers who have come along. He might have to get accustomed to what they're throwing, how their pitches break and all that other stuff, but nothing he can't get used to quickly and make the adjustment. And, you know, everybody uses the term professional hitter. I think in this case, he's a guy who says, hey, they have to throw it over the plate. It's my job to hit it. As long as it's over the plate, I'm going to hit it. I'm going to make contact. So, yeah.
I guess one of the main adjustments is that last year he was a teammate of Masahiro Tanaka's, and this year he'll have to adjust to facing that stuff. And that's a great, we'll talk about him a little later on, but yeah, it's a good fit for him. Or the problem, of course, with ever going back, whenever you go back to Oryx, the problem is that this team is so disorganized. I mean, they're just a Rubik's Cube. That you never know whether they're going to turn left, right, backwards, clockwise, or counterclockwise.
Right, right. Which is one of the reasons I asked him. I said, do they want you to just come in and slug the ball, or do they want you to get on base as much as possible and be an RBI? Because at this point, this team is still scoring the fewest runs in the Pacific League. They're having their issues getting guys across the plate. And you know, if he can get on base and just be a constant presence on base, that's an issue for opposing teams. But of course, he's not the greatest runner, so
no.
You're still going to have to figure out how to score him. So, I mean, do they want him to just sit back and say, "Hey, look, when there's guys on base, we want you to be really aggressive and swing hard and drive these guys in," or do they want you to just keep the train moving, keep the line moving?
Well, I think if Oryx had that much of a plan, they probably wouldn't need him.
If they had a plan that they were implementing, yes, they wouldn't be.
I'm saying, because it's not like they're short of talent. We talk about this year in and year out. I don't think there's really no gap in talent. I don't think there's any gap in talent in the Pacific League, and Oryx has certainly got their share. They've got their fundamental problem is organizing their roster and keeping their pitchers healthy. Because that's a good team.
Yeah, yeah. Except maybe for the pitching at times. But the other thing that that surprised me was that last question and the fact that he chose to focus on the injury factor for Shohei Ohtani, because this is a 19-year-old kid, and I thought, if you're going to face the guy, obviously Jose would step into the batter's box and possibly Shohei Ohtani might be pitching. So I got the idea that he got the image of him on a mound as opposed to worrying about when Ohtani's at the plate.
Which makes sense,
because we don't figure to see Jose that much in the field, but it's possible. But the fact that he's worrying about an injury factor for a young player, I thought that was kind of surprising, because if anything, and of course, you're using different muscles, and you have to develop all those muscles as far as pitching, and then you have to do different muscle areas for hitting and swinging the bat. So I'm sure the injury factor is a key that the team has basically plotted out how to keep him from getting exhausted, keep him from doing too much, and that's why they have him take a couple days off before he's going to pitch, or they have his days planned out around his pitching schedule. But I thought that was interesting that he pointed at the injury factor and not anything else.
Well, I think the injury is the issue, is a big issue, and if you want to avoid injury, the easy solution to that is tell them, put your pitching on the shelf and go play in the outfield, because pitchers get hurt a lot. And the best pitchers, the two biggest factors for being a great, great pitcher is, one, having great, great talent and being a great, great pitcher, and two, not getting hurt too much.
Right.
Because
right.
a lot of guys who have that determination and quality never reach their level just because they get hurt at a young age. So that's always a possibility.
Yeah.
Of course, on the other hand, he could get hurt. This is a guy who could get hurt as a pitcher and then find himself as an all-star outfielder.
Right. So the other thing, obviously, he's coming back to a team where he played before, but I think it has mostly new players. players from when he was there. He was there in 2009, and I think at least in the starting lineup, at least since then, Lee Daiho, Yoshio Itoi, Hikaru Ito, the all-star catcher, and then Adachi, the shortstop, and then a couple pitchers, and an entirely new coaching staff, and the skipper's new, and there's a lot of unfamiliarity there, I think.
Unfamiliarity, yeah. Well, yeah. But again, it's not like he hadn't seen Ito. You know, he knows most of these guys. Teokada's still there. I see him as being mostly on the bench because they've got the Lee Daiho, Okada group being first base DH.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like he's going to take Aaron Boldier's job away at third base.
Right.
It's not like he's going to take Lee Daiho's position away at first base.
Right.
Of course, yeah, him and Okada. Platoon DH, it's very possible.
Yeah. You know, what I envisioned actually is in situations, a lot of times they get a runner on, maybe in late game situations, and they just want somebody else to come up and hit.
Yeah.
So pinch hitting, I saw. And then at times, let's say they're in a tie game situation and Lee Daiho maybe doubles or something and they want to run for him.
Sure.
They're going to need somebody to take over at first base and he can do that.
Right.
So those kinds of situations. And, you know, they don't lose too much in terms of power if he comes in and the game goes into extra innings. And it, like I said, it'd be late game situations anyway. He might not even come up to bat, but he can play in the field. So, you know, the Buffaloes are just two games under 500 before play starts here on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And they have winning records against SoftBank and against Nippon Ham, but they're 3-10 against the Eagles,
mm-hmm.
and that's a problem. So they have to figure out how to beat those good teams,
mm-hmm.
As well as, you know, win on a daily basis and win series against average teams or teams that are below them. But I mean, right now it's an elevator. Specifically, you can win two games in a row and go from last to third, and you can lose two games in a row and go from third to last. I mean, it's a mess, and like you said, I think it's going to stay that way.
Yep. So actually, I'm kind of curious. You know, are the Buffaloes bad at pinch hitting? You reckon?
The games I've watched, I haven't really seen them doing as much pinch hitting as other teams, to be honest. And so I can't recall whether they're getting a lot of production at that, from that situation or not. I would like to say it's probably average. It's probably no better, no worse than anybody else.
Okay. Well, I don't really have a clue, so my database isn't helping me out. It's saying, get a clue yourself. Don't ask me for help all the time. So I can't answer that question right now.
Well, then don't ask it. No, I'm kidding.
Wow. Does that count as a stupid question or a stupid answer?
Both.
John Gibson killing two birds with one stone.
Well, why is it my fault? I didn't ask the question. But I didn't answer it either. All right. Well,
don't ask me.
Good luck, Jose. Good luck with the Buffaloes. I obviously picked them to finish in the playoffs, so I would like to see that happen. But the team I picked to finish first in the Pacific League is not doing so well at all, SoftBank. So my pick looks like it's going to fall off. But again, you never know what can happen. So
you never know what can happen.
And, hey, you never know.
That's like the Japanese announcers. It's 8-run lead in the ninth inning. He says, well, you know, getting this leadoff runner is really important because you never know what can happen.
Oh, great. I'm like a Japanese announcer. I'm quitting.
All right. Give it up.
Let's move along. Let's talk about Tadahito Iguchi of the Chiba Lotte Marines. He got his 2,000th hit overall combined in the United States and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Slugs a home run off of the hottest pitcher in Japan, Masahiro Tanaka of the Eagles on Friday. And, it was kind of dramatic. And then to watch this game play out between the Marines and Eagles, because these are the top two teams in the Pacific League as far as the standings go right now. And it was an important game for both of them. And it was close. And Tanaka was pitching okay. He wasn't pitching great at times. But then you look up and it's still a 1-1 game until the sixth inning when Iguchi hits this home run. And then it just kind of, from there, it looked like the Eagles kind of lost their feathers. For lack of a better...
They molted, did they?
Wow. For lack of a better
term. So molt down and... Oh, I shouldn't use that word in Tohoku.
Well, yeah, you shouldn't. But then in the ninth inning, they rally. They come around and they steal the game with a double, a hit batter,
two walks,
one that forced in the tying run, and then they capped the rally with a game-winning single by Motohiro Shima.
Mm-hmm.
So they win the game 3-2 and spoil Iguchi's great night, but Iguchi still made the TV circuit last night. He was on a lot of TV shows doing interviews, and he's a guy I really like. I mean, I'm happy for him. I would hope, you know, and I don't know that this is possible. I think his hit total in Japan right now is right around 1,500 because he got 1,500 on Thursday. So,
it's just 1,504, I think.
Okay, somewhere right around there. So I don't think he can get to 2,000 in Japan, but I would like to see him do it. He's kind of up there in age. He's 38 as well, as far as I remember. So, you know, this is a guy who in 2001, he won a base stealing title with 44 and hit 30 home runs that year, and at that time he was only the third Japanese player to have 30 home runs and 40 steals in a season. So we're talking about a really good middle infielder who is now a first baseman.
Right. It's actually kind of a surprise that he never won an MVP award, but it was one of those things that happened. A couple of years when he was easily the best player in the league, the Hawks didn't win the pennant.
Which is a prerequisite among sports reporters.
And then I think one year when the Hawks did win, they gave it to somebody else who had a higher batting average.
So they were showing lots of things on TV last night, including, you know, he was the Hawks. The Fukuoka Daiei Hawks at the time, that was their name, now SoftBank. They're their top pick in 1996. Mm-hmm. And then in his very first game, he comes up and knocks a roller through the left side in his first at bat for his first hit.
Right.
And then later in the game, his fourth at bat, he hits a grand slam.
Wow.
So he had this gaudy, obviously, debut. That was May 3rd, 1997. So when the Hawks decided that they wanted to put him in the lineup, he really showed him that he wanted to stay and he deserved to be there.
Well, he was a guy that NPB was really worried about might to go to the majors straight out of Aoyama Gakuin University. He was on the list of all the major league scouts. In fact, one of the major league scouts called me and said, you know, I got a strange answer from NPB. I said, is Iguchi available? Is he tied up to any team? And they said, I asked, and they said, yeah, he can't, you're not allowed to take him. I won't say who said that, but he's known as the Minister of Disinformation at NPB. And basically it was a lie, because the draft had not happened. NPB, Iguchi was a fourth-year university student. He was in the process. It was either before or after he won the silver medal at the Atlanta Olympics with Japan. And there was a lot of interest. In fact, any time a scout was in the stands, the sports dailies in Japan would run tampering. You know,
his right.
teams, I think Randy Bass saw him hit once, and they said, oh, was it the batting cage? And again, major league scouts have access to Japanese players because in the past, the major league teams aren't the teams that have been paying off amateur players while they're amateurs,
right.
Unlike NPB teams have.
Right.
So they have that access, and NPB thinks it's unfair.
No. Tampering.
Exactly. You know, we got a picture of Nagashima with him, and nobody would say tampering. But if it was Randy Bass, it was like he was with the Diamondbacks at that time.
Mm.
So, So Iguchi's had quite a career, and then he went over to the States in 2005, and he was fourth in the Rookie of the Year voting that year with the Chicago White Sox. Played 2 years as their everyday second baseman, won the World Series in his first year. And then he was traded to the Phillies, released by the Phillies.
He won another World Series with them, but he wasn't as prominent.
Right. Went to San Diego, where he played actually quite a bit, and then wrapped up again with the Phillies. They gave him one last shot. I think he just played in about seven games for them.
Right.
So anyway, but quite a career, and he came back to the Marines, and it was a weird thing. It was one of those, a lot of the guys, Sadahara Oh last night said, it's quite amazing because most of the players who come back once their major league careers are done don't do anything. And the answer is, who has done anything? And the answer is Iguchi.
Yeah.
So he's had quite a career. I don't think anybody thought he was going to be a good player when he came back. It looked like the Marines signed him so that the guy who signed him could get a kickback from his signing bonus.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it looked. That guy has now been fired, essentially, for doing stuff like that.
I mean, he's got this flat swing. He's compact and really flat with his swing, and he hits the ball the other way, and he hits it hard. I mean, you don't always see him pulling the ball.
Right.
And he hit this home run last night off of Tanaka where he pulled the ball. It just seemed weird to me because I'm used to seeing him hit the ball the other way. But I thought he would do well. I just didn't think he was going to play second base as long as he did. And at one point, I remember Bobby Ballantyne saying something very uncomplimentary, very unflattering about the way he was swinging the bat and talking about him being tired. And I'm sure you remember that comment, which we can't really say on this program. And I thought, well, move him from second base. I mean, why are you playing him at second base all the time? But I think since he has made, and he was asked this last night on one of the TV shows that I happened to flip on, and they said, the fact that you're playing first base, has that really helped you conserve energy and take care of your body a little bit more? And he said, oh, it's really been a blessing to go to first base. I'm not running half as much as I used to, just run around covering on plays where the runner fakes like he's going to break. The second baseman has to go over and cover. He says he's not doing half of the running around on the defensive side, and it saves so much energy and preserves so much energy that it's added some pop to his bat. And we can see that he's got this career high of 30 home runs, and he's at 19 now.
Yeah, that's possible.
I think he can get there the way he's been slugging. As soon as I said that, remember about four shows back, I said the Marines have no pop at all. And then right after that comment, Iguchi just started going wild. He's hit most of his home runs in June and July.
Well, I think he hit most of his home runs in May. He hit 12 in May.
Oh, it was May then. I'm sorry.
Okay. But, just to say about Bobby, one of the things he said about Iguchi, which surprised him, which is, he was still surprised all through the 2009 was the year the Marines were trying to drag him out of the office, actually trying to get him to quit.
Right.
They were basically giving him hot foots, playing practical jokes on him, putting scorpions in his chair. They're doing everything to get him out of Chiba Marine Stadium.
Right.
And they put Iguchi on him, and it wasn't a kind of move that he would have made, because he likes to give he had a young player, Shinichi Nemoto, ready to play second base, and instead Nemoto got sent back to the farm team. So Bobby eventually said, I'm surprised. I knew Iguchi had been a great player, but I'm surprised how hard he works, but I'm surprised how hard he can still bring it, and what a good teammate he was. And for Bobby, being a good teammate is almost a prerequisite for playing on his team.
Right, which makes sense. Now, one little note of trivia here, which I know you love when I do this to you. Iguchi is the fifth Japanese player to accumulate 2,000 hits in the major leagues and NPB. Who are the other guys?
Well, Ichiro Suzuki's obvious.
That's just a no-brainer.
Yeah, because he's close to 4,000 right now.
Right.
Hideki Matsui.
That's a no-brainer. Now you get tested, Mr. Allen.
I'm going to say Kazuo Matsui.
Yes. Excellent. One more.
Norihiro Nakamura.
Oh, he gets all four.
Damn, dude.
Fist bump.
Oh,
he gets
yeah.
all four.
And what was? And the trivia was what?
2,000 hits combined for Japanese players in the major leagues,
right,
and NPB. Now, there's another player in NPB this year who needs one hit to get his 2,000th in NPB. And
now, that's a trick question. And not only did he need one hit,
he still needs one hit.
As of
Saturday, he'll probably get it.
Well, he went into the same game with Iguchi needing two hits.
Okay.
And had he got it in the ninth inning, it could have ended that game a little sooner. And the answer is
Andrew Jones.
Exactly. He's got. So he's got 1,950 hits in the major leagues.
Okay, he's got 66 here in Japan.
66 in Japan. He almost got 67 last night, but he got hit.
He got hit, yeah.
He got hit in the process, and that don't count.
Yeah. All right, well, he got hit, but he was in that rally that helped Makun extend his winning streak to 14 consecutive wins to start the season.
Right.
He's now one off the Japan record, which I believe is 15 to start the season.
Yep.
And that's Kazumi Saito of the Fukuoka Hawks.
And Shigekuni
Mashiba
of the Nippon Ham Fighters back in the 80s.
But what's his to start the season?
To start the season, 15 in a row.
Okay.
So he's one away from that record, and he's two away from another record, which is the all-time pitcher's winning streak of 20, which was set originally by, I forget his name, a pitcher named Matsuda with the Giants in 1951 and 1952, and then with the great Kazuki Inao.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it was 1957. With the Nishitetsu Lions.
I'm going to have to trust you.
well, that's sometimes not wise, but, you got to do what you got to do.
Don't burn me, bro.
I'm not here to burn you unless we both go up in flames, man.
So, yeah, he has won now 18 consecutive decisions. So mm-hmm. It is so funny. During the Hero interview, he just seemed like he couldn't believe it because he thought for sure probably that he was going to lose this game last night, Friday night. Team looked pretty much dead in the water, but he throws 90 pitches to throw a complete game.
You love that.
And I read somewhere that was the second time he's thrown 90 pitches or fewer than 100 pitches to complete a game.
Wow.
He gave up 5 hits, 2 strikeouts, just 2 strikeouts, which is rare for him. And then,
well, that goes with the 90 pitches, yeah.
One walk, he's got a PL leading 1.28 ERA. 3-2 was the final at Kleenex on Friday night. And like I said before, a bloop double, a hit by pitch, 2 walks to tie the score, and then an epic at bat by his catcher, who saw 11 pitches before wrapping the single in the left field.
There were some good at-bats. I mean, there were some good at-bats. And, yeah, the leadoff double by Genji Akuminai was just barely fair.
Barely.
It was a fly ball between the third base and the left field, and it took a nice hop. It bounced an inch fair and then scooted foul as fast as it could go.
Right, it started running away from the glove.
I saw that. He started running down to second base thinking this is possible, and he was almost out. So it was a great, exciting game, and too bad for Seth Greisinger, who allowed one run in 6 innings and got... one run in 7 innings and got nothing to show for that.
Yeah,
so
he was in line for the win. Yeah, it was too bad.
I've stopped keeping track of Masahiro Tanaka's quality starts, which is 3 earned runs or fewer and 6 innings pitched or more. But he hasn't had a game that wasn't a quality start since he lost that game on August 2nd, 2012. So he's in the area of about 30 consecutive quality starts, which he would have had last night even had he lost.
Right, right.
So
and he was warming up to go out there and pitch.
He was. He was standing on the sidelines as soon as they got the tying run in position.
Yeah, because actually they got the tying run on third base with no outs.
Right.
And it looked like they were going to squander the opportunity. They had a strikeout, and then somehow, some way, they got the runs across. So you got to part just because they watched about a lot of nervous pitches. It looked like,
yeah.
But you had to hand it to them. They did well to get to where they got, and they got him the game. So how do you see this thing going now?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. They talked to, of course, they always talk to Senichi Hoshino after the game, the Eagles manager, and he said, you know, you guys are 3 games ahead of the Marines now. He says, you know, this is the middle of our process. You know, it's not where we want to be. They said, how does this look like? This is a big game for you this season. He says, well, I think hopefully we'll have games that are even more defining for. We have some games that are even more definitive of our season left to play. So, but this is, yeah, it's good. And he said, you know, Yuchi got his hit, and it looked like his home run, and it looked like that was the game. He said, well, I was thinking very positive, and when Higuchi hit the home run, I kept seeing this scenario. I started seeing this scenario where we won, we had a walk-off sayonara win. So, and that's the way it happened, so I want to congratulate Mr. Higuchi.
Thank you very much. Please come back.
Indeed, you're welcome anytime.
And bring that pitcher with you.
Right.
All right, well, we'll see how long this goes. I think he'll be facing the Fighters next week. They're scheduled to face them on Friday at Sapporo Dome, so we'll see how that goes. Let's move along to the All-Star Game. Let's not forget that there was the finale, the All-Star Game number 3, played in Iwaki on Monday of last week.
Who could forget that there were 3 All-Star Games, except perhaps the people who are playing in it? The memories, you know, happy for the people in Fukushima where they had their first All-Star Game in history. And it was a very good game.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay.
Well, you see, it was my kind of game from a reporter's standpoint. I'm having watched this game, I'm seriously convinced that, you know, they put money in a pool and pitchers have to pay into the pool if they throw a ball, and batters have to pay, you know, have to pay into the pool if they take a ball.
If they take a strike.
If they take a strike. So I can't remember my numbers right now, but through the first three innings, there were 4 called balls.
Yeah. I saw your tweets.
Yeah. And at 6 innings, it was 6. And I think the game, when the game got competitive towards the end, it got up to about 13. And there were about 189 pitches in the entire game for both sides.
And Jim's sitting there tweeting how tweet it is.
He was
a tweeting fool.
Yeah.
You had so much time, but I don't know. I was kind of all starred out at that point. I just wanted it to get over with. It was a 3-1 victory for the Pacific Leaguers, and Shohei Ohtani comes on late. He gets an RBI single in the 8th to tie the score, and then Seiichi Uchikawa of the Hawks doubles in the game-winning runs. But, I mean, Hiroshi Kisanuki is your starter. That told me all I needed to know about that game. It's a let's get going and let's get out of here kind of a situation. There were no home runs in the series, and that was the first time since 1953. So 60 right. years of homer happiness died. And I was joking with my tweeps. I said, it looks like they used the old new balls for this game, because the balls just got to the warning track, a couple of them, and just decided they'd had enough.
they got the new balls now.
They wanted to feel the glove.
That's right.
And then one follower said that he said a couple balls that carried a little bit farther than he thought they should have, but I was on the side that these balls were not carrying very much, and nobody got a souvenir. The 3-1 win, it was kind of a, you know, ho-hum, let's go. You know, this is the third one of these things, let's not get anybody injured.
Actually, it'll probably turn out to be Scandal Ballgate Part 2 when it's found out that the Secretary General of NPB switched out the All-Star balls without telling anybody as a kind of practical joke to the hitters.
No, that would have been Kato who did it. He says, this time I did know.
But I was lying to you.
All right, well, the All-Star Game series, it was over 1-1-1, so one win for the Central League.
Now, let me ask you, have they announced who's going to get the first draft choice in the upcoming draft? Because the All-Star Game determines who gets gets first crack at the 13th player taken in the draft, because the first 12 are decided by lottery.
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay, and there's a formula. They used to determine by, you know, the league's finishing in the Japan series, but since the draft now occurs a few days before the Japan series, they need some way of doing that. And they figured the Major League All-Star Game now means something.
Right.
So let's make the Japan All-Star Game mean something. So if the standings stay as they are, it would mean either the Yakult Swallows or the Nippon Ham Fighters would get the 13th highest blue chippiest draft.
Let's just hope that Japan doesn't follow the U.S. model and decide to make the game mean, or the series mean something, because especially with these ties that they have in there. Oh, no, no, no more. No mas.
Okay, Roberto, next topic.
All right, let's talk about leaders and some defensive stuff here now.
Wow.
The leaders in the Central League, we're just going to go with the big stuff, and your batting leader is still Hector Luna of the Chunichi Dragons at 369, but Tony Blanco is second. He's at 329. We know that Luna is hurt. He was deactivated a little bit back. He's got a bad knee. We'll have to see if he can stay in this thing. He's going to have to come back and hit. So I don't know that the other guys can catch him. But Tony Blanco at 329, I wouldn't have thought that when we talked about this earlier in the season. I wouldn't have maybe a 3 in the 10 someplace, but not 320.
I'll tell you, Tony is really playing ball this year. He's like, it's almost like he said, I'm coming to the ballpark, you know, the Dragons wanted me to be a home run hitter, but I'm more than that. I was watching him before game one of the All-Star game, taking fielding practice, and I said, man, you keep doing that, you're going to win a Golden Glove. He says, yeah, I hope so.
Good.
Because he was working out. It's like, almost like, I don't get to do this with my team because they don't take my fielding seriously. Mm. He was really enjoying the fielding practice. He was taking some tough shots, and he was out there, and I watched him make a good play last night, and I think he's doing it's almost like he's saying he's making a statement. I'm a complete ball player. I can hit for average. I can hit for power. I can play defense. And I'll tell you, if for some miracle the Bay Stars can win the league and beat the Giants, Tony Blanco is the MVP.
Yeah, I would do that. In the Pacific League, the batting leader, and this comes as a surprise because I obviously when we got the question, what team could most use Manny Ramirez this year, I said it was the Eagles. Well, Genji Akaminai of the Eagles is hitting .343. He's leading the Pacific League in hitting. Now, right behind him is Yuya Hasegawa of the Hawks, and he's probably going to get enough hits. I'm sorry, plate appearances to stay in it if he continues to hit as well. Mm-hmm. But he's a guy who is not great defensively, so they shuffle him in and out of the lineup. He only appeared on the batting leaders, I think it was late May or early June. Yuya Hasegawa.
Well, he's become, his position is really solid. He hit so well in May and June that he's played very well. You know, he's continuing to play very well. He's just, he said something weird to me when just before it was announced that he was the June player of the month. Mm-hmm. He said basically, I haven't quite. What you see is a result of my hard work, and I'm thinking, a lot of balls that fell in, but but he's serious about it. He's had a lot of ups and downs since he broke out about 5 or 6 years ago, and he's been, as with each passing year, he's just been a little more consistent at his upward maximum. Mm-hmm. So I think he's a little above that right now, but he's a guy who could easily finish the year .340 or .330, and he could win a batting championship.
Yep. All right. On the home run side in the Central League, the two guys who have been banging the whole season,
yep.
Coco Ballantyne of the Swallows and Tony Blanco.
Yep.
Coco has 33, but he hurt his left forearm last night, I think it was.
Okay.
I tweeted it out. I don't know. I know that he came out of the game
for
a pinch runner, but. And then Tony Blanco has 30, mm-hmm. Coco has 33. So, and those are the two RBI leaders.
Yep.
Blanco has 88.
Yeah.
Coco has 74. So, I don't see anybody else. I mean, it's just between these two guys.
Right. The question here is
how far and how long?
Well, I think the two questions are: is Vladimir Ballantyne going to break Sadaharo's home run record?
Probably not,
because the odds are against it. Right now he's still on a track for about 60, but that's such a hard thing to do. The other thing is, can Tony Blanco win a triple crown? Both of these are very possible, but very unlikely, but very possible, so something to look forward to.
All right, in the Pacific League, the two teammates with the Fighters, Sho Nakata with 22 home runs and Michelle Abreu with 21, so
yep.
They're neck and neck.
Yep.
I don't know. I would have to go with Nakata in this one just because he's a guy who he's just more familiar with the pitchers and everything. But again, late in the season, who knows who's going to be out there on the mounds and who's going to be.
True. And we're getting into the time. It seems odd when we've just been talking about Tony Blanco and Vladimir Ballantyne, but we're getting into the part of the season where I did a study, and this is really old stuff, and I wasn't as good as doing studies as I am now, which is to say I'm still pretty poor, but I used to be really bad. But I did a study that showed basically if you took the best foreign hitters and put them against the best Japanese hitters
mm-hmm.
on the same team, take the top two mm-hmm. foreign hitters, the top two Japanese hitters, that the foreign hitters tended to dominate August like no other month, like nobody dominates any month of the season. So but that was an old study. It was done when there were fewer foreign players. There was less there were only two guys on the roster at the time, so.
Right,
but this is the time of the season where a lot of the Japanese pitches tend to flatten out a lot, and this is the opportunity. The window of opportunity.
It's hot out there, man. Right.
It is hot out there.
All right, RBI leaders in the Pacific League, Hideto Asamura of the Lions, which is kind of a surprise. This kid's been banging, like you talked about, since they put him in the number four hole. He just went nuts.
Yeah, he said, is this the position where I get to hit a lot of home runs and drive in, hit for average and drive in a lot of runs? Okay, I'll play first base.
Yeah.
He's a shortstop, basically. So, but they put him at first base, and he looks like playing like Tony Blanco over there.
Yep. And then Tadahito Iguchi has 61 RBIs, yep. and he's tied with Aaron Baldarese of yep. the Buffaloes. And then right behind them is Sho Nakata with yep. 60. So that's going to be an interesting race. Now, I want to talk about, well, let's get into the pitchers real quick. We'll right. just touch on them. Central League, Jason Standridge of the Hanshin Tigers at 2.41 ERA. He's right. the ERA leader, followed by Kenta Maeda. Like I said, that Hanshin rotation, they know what they're doing.
Right.
They're serious, and I like that. I like that rotation. I'm looking for big things. Hopefully we can get an interview with Jason Standridge going down the stretch, and then Randy Messenger as we head toward the pennant race.
Well, Randy got all those runs at the beginning of the season that he hadn't gotten the previous 2 years. He started out, I think he started the season with an eight or nine game winning streak dating back to last year. And Jason Standridge, I hope he was getting some money for those runs he wasn't getting. I think he was selling them on the black market.
All right. Because
he was getting beat up.
All
right. He was a loser. Just Jason, there's a funny thing going on with the Tigers and the Bay Stars. Their records are even. You see this a lot in the Central League because basically the difference in the Central League is who won some games against the Pacific League and who didn't win any.
Any, yeah.
So the Tigers and Bay Stars record is even now.
Mm-hmm.
And last night was a matchup between Shugo Fuji of the Bay Stars,
mm-hmm.
who is, I'm going to say, 5-5-3 this year, with 6-3, with 4 of those wins coming against the Tigers.
And 3 of them... Three of them complete games
yeah, and won a shutout.
Yeah.
And Jason Standridge, who pitched his first game against the Bay Stars on Saturday night, has lost 4 straight to them. He lost his last three games to them last year. So it's a minefield out there, man. You can't even beat the Bay Stars. What's this world coming to?
No offense. Don't take it. All right. In the Pacific League, Ma Kun, obviously, 1.28 ERA, we yep. said earlier, he's leading. But then Yusei Kikuchi of Seibu is right behind him at 1.58. That'll be an interesting race just to see if Ma Kun gives up more runs as he goes along in this thing. But he's pretty much looks unbeatable. Kikuchi has done really well. I'm surprised. I'm happy for him. But this is the time. Mm-hmm. This will be the test. The August, it'll be August next week for our next show,
mm-hmm.
and then September, and that's when he's really got to be ready to keep these things out. I don't see a problem with Malkun, and as soon as the summer months or the summer temperatures peak and start to go down, I think some energy comes back into these pitches. So now I know you wanted to talk about some defense because
yep.
we did discuss it real quickly. We only have
yeah.
a couple minutes.
Okay, well,
I don't want the producer to get angry.
Well, I know who the producer is, buddy. So
and you know where he lives.
That's right. He's a friend of mine. So don't give me no sass. No, don't give me any more sass than you used to giving me. Okay, let's put it that way.
Right.
Okay. Well, just basically last week I went into a fairly long song and dance, which for me is extensive, about how good the Hawks were on defense. And I was talking about something that wasn't particularly clear to the listeners, I'm sure, because even worse, it wasn't particularly clear to me. I was talking about the difference between what teams do on offense
mm-hmm.
and what they do on defense. You know, how good... Essentially two different things, but in the balance it helps your team when you're talking about how competitive they are. Are they better at something than their opponent? And essentially I was talking about how much better the Hawks are at catching the ball than their opponents are at recording outs against the Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was calling that defense, which is sort of like saying the team that wins the most games has the best defense.
Right.
Okay, so that was kind of a non sequitur, and I missed that at the time of the podcast. And so John was going on about how his impression of the Hawks didn't jibe with that statement. And so I was coming over here to the Purple Palace on the bus today, and I kind of rejigged or refigured my numbers and did another calculation, which I figured out double play success and how often their team fields balls in play and turns them into outs and how infrequently they make errors. So I crushed those three numbers, and in a very imprecise fashion, basically I broke down NPB's teams into 4 groups.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The top three teams, the tier one teams in terms of defense
okay.
overall are the Hanshin Tigers, number one.
Hanshin, number one.
Seibu Lions, number two.
Seibu, number two. That's surprising.
Yomiuri Giants, number three.
That's not surprising.
Okay. The Giants are very bad at double plays, but they're good at everything else.
Right.
Okay. The the second tier teams are the Rakuten Eagles,
mm-hmm.
the Hiroshima Carp, who mm-hmm. make a lot of errors, but they catch a lot of balls.
Right.
And they're also one of the better teams in Japan at turning double plays this year. And the Hawks and the Fighters, who made a big jump. They started the season out miserably.
Okay.
But I'll say, as much as I like Nishikawa as a hitter, their injured second baseman, he really is not a good second baseman yet.
Yes,
so,
right.
So I think having him out of the lineup has helped their defense. Okay, now the third-tier teams, they're just a step below that, are the Marines, the Dragons, the Bay Stars, and the Buffaloes,
mm-hmm.
which leaves one Tier 4 team. And they are so far below, I wanted to call them Tier 5, and that's the Yakult Swallows. They're bad at this, they're bad at that, and they're bad at the other. So
that's a strikeout.
Yeah, that's three strikes, you're out. Hopefully there's not a three-strike law, or some Swallows fielders might be getting the death penalty.
They might have their gloves confiscated.
Could be.
At the border.
Yeah, could be. I don't know what's up with that, other than they've played about four different shortstops this year. They've played several different second basemen this year. I think that the injuries have forced them to use everybody everywhere. The only consistent player on the Swallows this season has been Vladimir Valentin. He missed the first 12 games, and he's an adequate right fielder. He's got a good arm, and he doesn't hurt himself too much in the outfield.
Right.
But and I guess Lasting's Millage, and I would put the same for Lasting's Millage. He's capable of some good plays. He's capable of some horrible plays.
Right.
But basically, all the other five, the four positions in the infield, the catcher, center fielder, have been a mixed bag,
right.
You know, grab bag.
Right.
So that's my comment on the defense.
All right. And, you know, my simple impression was it's hard to watch on TV and judge how hard a ball is hit, and you don't always see where a fielder started out to try to get balls. But my impression of the Hawks was that many of their players on the middle infielders that they shuffle in and out, they're off and on. They're not great. Sometimes they'll have some great plays. Sometimes they'll have some really pathetic plays. And then in the outfield, I thought they were basically just average. And I think they're average at catcher. I just didn't see any place where they're excelling in as far as defense. And
well,
that was my impression.
Matsuda is quite good.
Yeah.
Matsuda is quite good. And Honda is quite good, but he's not playing right now.
Right.
I would say that whoever they put out in right field is pretty good, because usually they're using right field as their glove replacement spot.
Right.
And Hasegawa is pretty good.
Right.
He's pretty good. Uchikawa is not. The shortstop, Iwami, I think the jury's out on him. He's at average, maybe.
Yeah, they're off and on. And same with the Carp. They made some good plays in their game last night. And again, they made a bonehead play where last night, I think it was Iwamoto was at first base and Cam Mikolajo was on the mound. It was two outs and Mikolajo fields a grounder that was toward him. He came over and fielded it. And there's Iwamoto
over there shaking hands with him.
Laying it off at the first base, and there's nobody to throw it to at first base, and the tying run comes across. And I mean, that's what I mean about not being clutch. They're good defensive players. It's just that with the game on the line, they don't seem to make the right plays, or their heads seem to be in the Carp.
Well, I'll tell you, that's Shinya Miyamoto who won. He didn't win a slew of Golden Gloves because of what he was playing with the Swallows, but basically he's one of the reason he was a very good shortstop is not because he's faster and more athletic than the other guys, but because he thinks so fast, he makes good snap judgments, and that's if you can play the field, play the position, and you can outthink the other guys, you're going to be the best fielder at your position.
Yep. All right, now there are no questions this week, but we love hearing from you, so make us get that crack staff to work. You know that crack staff loves to work, right, Jim?
We do indeed. In fact, we're breaking up. We're so crack.
So please send your questions or comments to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll address them on the show.
Did you just call me a cracker?
No, I said you're cracking me up.
Okay. Just as long as we get our cracks straight.
Oh, no. You see what happens, people, when you don't send questions?
Yes.
I blame you.
Wow, we're like baseball now. We blame the audience when we do something stupid.
That's right. The fans, you have to, in this case, you have to reach over and grab the ball. Reach
wow.
over the fence.
Wow.
And grab the ball.
That's kind of personal.
Come on. Reach over in the, you know, if you're sitting in foul territory, whether you're sitting in foul territory or in
take,
the region,
take charge.
Reach over the fence and take charge of this play.
Send us something we can put on the air.
And we'll talk about it on the show. Thanks a lot for listening. Catch you next week.
All right, everyone. Thanks a lot.
Enjoy your baseball.
Yeah, do that.